This is the parenting class. If Jesus were a parent, how would he train children? And he kind of was a parent in a different sort of setting, but we've been looking Sunday mornings primarily at things Jesus said and tried to, you know, maybe make a transition to parenting. I thought I saw someone else out there. Make a transition into parenting from his teaching. And then last week we kind of veered off into Proverbs because the Proverbs has so much about humility, and we asked what one characteristic from Jesus that we could draw that might help us most as parents, or what would be most important, and humility is what we came up with. So we went into Proverbs last week. We're actually going to spend the first part of class this morning in Proverbs 2. One of the things I asked you last week to think about is when we read a few of these Proverbs, try to come up with a present-day illustration example that maybe you've experienced or just seen, or just have a very creative imagination about, that might help us as we parent our children from the point of, you know, the wisdom of the writer of Proverbs. So that's what we're going to do this morning. Then we're going to look more into some of the other questions from Parenting 4. Your Bibles or your whatever tool you might have. To Proverbs, we're going to look at a few Proverbs just back-to-back. I'm going to ask us to read 3, 4, 5 Proverbs in a row. And as we're reading through these, I want you to, you know, try to think of some illustrations. What does the passage mean, but particularly what does it mean in the framework of parenting? Okay, so you got that? All right, so we're going to begin with Proverbs 8:13. So somebody raise your hand who's ready to read Proverbs 8:13. All right, Amy?
Right now. The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil. Pride and arrogance in the way of evil and perverted speech I hate.
Okay, Proverbs 11:2. Some other volunteer? Rochelle?
When pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with the humble is wisdom.
All right. 15:25. Somebody else? Jared, you looked up, so it's you.
I got you. 15:25. I'm a little slow. All right. The Lord tears down the house of the proud, but maintains the widow's boundaries.
16:5. Tim Castleberger.
Everyone who is arrogant in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Be assured he will not go unpunished.
All right. 16:18 and 19. David Berg. 18 and 19.
I was hoping you said Heather Berg.
Yeah, I might have. But I meant you.
18 through 19. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. It's better to be of a lowly spirit with the poor than to divide the spoil with the proud.
21:4. Right.
Haughty eyes and a proud heart, the lamp of the wicked are sinners.
Okay, we're going to stop with that. So putting all those together, kind of what is your sense of what the proverb writer is trying to communicate to us?
Pride is a problem.
Pride is a problem. What kind of a problem?
Common problem.
Okay.
Significant problem.
Do we see pride being a problem in our parenting? Some of you are saying yes. All right. So tell us, share with us what difficulties you had, or I don't want to make this a confession thing, but just in principle, why is it potentially a problem in the family, in raising children? Andy?
Because when somebody possibly brings something to your attention that you may not be doing well as a parent, it's really, really hard to take that with all the love and wisdom that it comes to you.
Yeah.
Sometimes parents are, and I'm thankful for that, but sometimes our parents or our good friends will say, you might want to think about.
Yeah, you might want to.
And it's really hard because you think, especially when you're a young parent, you think you had it all figured out.
Yeah, we as young parents, we learned from our parents what not to do, and we weren't going to repeat all those mistakes. But, yeah. Didn't turn out that way, did it? Dave?
Well, this is just my experience. In my experience, there's an age at which I feel like I could rule, parent, be the authority fairly easily, whether it was just because I was older or wiser or smarter or bigger or louder or whatever. Then there comes a point at which our children are starting to, they're starting to come into their own and they're starting to develop their own thoughts and their stubborn will and their beliefs. And to me, there's a little bit of a power struggle that starts to go on there as a parent. I'm starting to learn, whoa, what's actually going on here is I'm having to let go, and my child is reaching an age where they're going to make some decisions for themselves and do some things, and there's part of that I don't like, because it was easier when I could just say, this is what we're doing, and this is why, and I don't really need to give answers, and you're just going to do it because I'm an intimidating presence. And when all of a sudden your kids aren't intimidated by you anymore, and push back. They're pushing back because they see it differently and they have a different viewpoint. And as a parent, pride for me, there could be, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to lose this battle, and I don't like you telling me no or that you see it different. And my pride can get in the way there if all I care about is being right and all I care about is being the authority and all I care about is winning this argument with my child, because I don't like that they're just not going along with the program. Yeah. And learning to take a step back from that and think about what they're saying and think about what I'm saying and think about what the ultimate goal here is and having a different lens, because they're just not 8 years
old. So you kind of answered the question I was going to ask right there.
Yeah.
What do you do about that? So you look at it differently. Approved it. You're not being motivated primarily by pride.
That involves some humility, and that's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. Amy, did you get one? No. I wanted to come back to the whole, the battle, the struggle, the conflict, that we experience when the kids reach a certain stage in life. We prepare them for that. So that's good. That's healthy. And that means that we're probably doing the right thing, because we're getting them to think on their own. Reason things out for yourself. Now, you may come up with a different scenario, conclusion as to how to deal with this circumstance or situation than the children do, but you're training them to try to think it through. And the hard part is when they come up, with a different, series of actions than you might or we might. What about examples, illustrations of your children being prideful? How do we keep your children from being, our children from being prideful? Can you think of any examples? All right, Rich.
Yeah, so I'll go back to younger age, because I'm still dealing with the whole teenager thing. But there's an obvious situation you can see when they're 4, 5, 6, whatever, maybe even younger, but clearly in that age when they're interacting with other people a lot more, maybe being influenced by kids at school or whatever, when it just smacks you in the face that my kid thinks he's better than other people.
Yeah.
And that is hideous and needs to be disabused immediately, right? That's the kind of that's the root that cannot take hold. And I think a lot of battles are lost right there. If you actually allow your kid to think they're better than other people, then you're enabling a lot of other really bad behaviors that are going to come later. So, just if you look at God's attitude towards it, right? I mean, it is to be hated. Pride is
it's an abomination to it.
It's abomination. And you can reinforce as they do get older. I like, you know, probably 16 there. Hanging out with people who are prideful and arrogant is terrible for you. It's not the people you want to be with. You don't want to be that person. People who would want to be with you if you are that person are not the people you want to be with. I mean, it just, and maybe the positive side of it, in Proverbs 15, that God is on the side of the vulnerable. God cares about the weak. God cares about the widows, in this example. But that's what they should be about, is seeing other people's needs, and rather than I'm better than somebody and I don't need to help them or I don't need to share or whatever it is. But I think it starts early on.
Yeah, it does. And actually, Rich and I did not talk, but this was kind of the core to my little piece for where pride fits in the parenting process. I want to develop a few things. Because I learn best, and I think maybe most people do, when there's a real life illustration of, you know, how does that really play out? You know, so I've got a couple examples that I'm going to share with you that I think when you hear, you go, oh, okay, mine is like this, mine is like that. And hopefully from that, you can go, I can be a little more aware as a parent to watch out for behaviors that Rich was referring to. Jeff.
One thing I think that can be effective, and I like to think or hope that it helped with my kids, is that I think that the neutralizer of pride is service, and especially service when you get nothing in return.
Yeah.
So I try to hit my kids all the time. Let's go do this. Let's move this couch. Let's cut this grass. Let's just go to the store. I try to also, if one of them has a project, everyone's going to the store. Well, why do we have to go to the store? Because, you know, you're going to help your brother and all this kind of stuff. Whatever it is,
yeah.
But I think that, and it helps me as well also, because I have to do it with them. But I think that is like a real neutralizer, because it just shows, you know, sometimes you have to do stuff and you get nothing in return, and this is how it is.
And what that says is, I am not better than them.
Right.
I am, and those are the illustrations, the kinds of illustrations I'm looking for. So you really jumped the gun on it. Or not jumped the gun, but you did a nice job of explaining, you know, a real-life illustration of, well, how do I get my kids to see that they can't act like they're better than everybody else. And if they do, you have to, as Rich said, you have to deal with it immediately. My dad had a lot of good qualities, and had not so good ones, but he just instilled in us kids when we were young that we were not average, we were above average. Mostly had to do with academics. So we were, the C's in my house were like, you better not bring one of those home. That's just what was in his head. Now, trust me, I brought several C's home. It was never pleasant, but I nevertheless. But he followed that up with it. But if you ever act like you're better than somebody else, I'm going to knock you across the room. So I have an illustration that is kind of played out in my life, and it happened so long ago, but it's still in my head. So it must have been, you know, one of those, you know, moments of teaching my son something that will stay with him for life, and it has. Most of you know I played baseball when I was a kid. Back in the day, Little League was one league. If you were between the ages of 9 and 12 and you wanted to play baseball, you tried out for a team. And if you made it, great. If you didn't, good luck next year. Now, that was just the way it was back then. Fortunately, I was a pretty good little player. The 12-year-olds were the ones who made the all-star teams. They were usually the better players anyway. Every once in a while, there'd be an 11-year-old that was just a little special, you know, a little special talent. It was back before there was, you know, everybody's worried about somebody's ego. And I thought I was one of those 11-year-olds. It was pretty close, you know. I'm telling Dad right at the end of the season, maybe I'm going to make the All-Star team. And he just stopped me dead in my tracks, and he said, All-Star teams for 12-year-olds. There are going to be two 11-year-olds that make the All-Star team this year. You're not one of them. He wasn't a coach. He wasn't involved in a league. He wasn't anything except an observant parent. And he said, you're not going to make it. Well, I didn't. But I remember that story, and it was just like, stop thinking too highly of yourself, son. Come back down to, you know, where you need to be. I have a second story, so sadly it's also a baseball story, but and I'm not sure how to deal with this, so I'm going to ask, you know, how would you deal with it? Because this is going to come up Maybe not in your own kids, but in the kids who influence your kids. I was coaching one of Jeffrey's, called Senior Little League or something, but he was 15. And he was on the All-Star team, and I happened to be the coach. Our team won the league, so I was the one selected to be the coach of the All-Star team. The very best player in the whole league got a base hit. Game is very tight. It's late in the game. I put on what's called a hit-and-run play. It means the runner runs, and the guy at the plate just tries to make contact with the ball. So the kid on first base, who was very fast, excellent player, takes off as soon as the pitcher moves to the mound, or moved from the mound to the plate. Batter gets a base hit. Not a big one. It's kind of weak, you know, just barely out of the outfield. And this really good player, round second, coming to third. If it would have been a good hit, I would have sent him. But it wasn't. The guy in center field who got the ball was way too close. So I held him up. He ignored me. He was actually safe because it was a really bad throw. He would have been out by 10 feet. The inning was over. Player got ready to run out to the field and said, "No, you're on the bench now. Best player that we've got. You're on the bench now." "What do you mean I'm on the bench? I said, "Boy, you didn't follow the instructions. You're on the bench. I'm going to put somebody else in." And he just had a tizzy fit. The other players were okay with it. He wasn't, but the other players were okay. Most of the parents were pretty upset with me because the star player is not in the game anymore. His own mother was not upset with me. But that was a boy who was so full of himself, like, I can even ignore authority. In this case, it was just a silly baseball game. But I can even ignore authority because I'm who I am. I'm special. I'm better. I'm more important. I'm more valuable. I can make decisions that other people don't get to make. That was never instilled in that boy when he was growing up. You know, from ages 3, 4, 5, when they start thinking, well, I'm better. I'm more valuable. What would Jesus have done? Not necessarily in that situation, but when Jesus saw somebody acting like they were better than other people, how did Jesus deal with that? And then hopefully we can say, well, how do I deal with my kids? You know, maybe there's some specific things. I really like the service aspect because that just neutralizes or levels the playing field. Start with Jesus. How would Jesus handle a situation where somebody felt they were better than somebody else? Do we have any examples of that?
He would have waved him home, Randy.
He would have waved him home? Yeah, but he would have made sure the guy made a bad throw. Did. You look like you were written about
it. I was going to say that he just told them sometimes, you know, if you want to be great, be the least.
Yeah.
Get in the back of the line. I mean, he sometimes it was just direct instruction. It wasn't always illustrated because he did wash feet when the disciples came in all thinking they were better than each other. Mm-hmm. He illustrated that by service that he performed for them.
Okay, so he took on the role of the servant to just... Did he ever deal... Can you think of an instance where he dealt with people who thought they were better? Rich, maybe that's not the question. Or
yeah, no, it is. So he told the story of a Pharisee, I believe, and a tax collector who are going up to the temple, and the Pharisee is saying, "I'm so thankful, God," talking to himself, though, "that I'm not like these other people. I fast, I tithe, I do all these things," or even like this tax collector, and he points out the other guy. I mean, that guy clearly thought he was better than other people, and then the tax collector is not even willing to look up to heaven and says, "Be merciful to me, a sinner." And Jesus' reaction to that, which I think is what matters, is he says, the humble guy is justified. He's forgiven by God. And the arrogant guy just is not. I mean, and the implication is he'll burn in hell, right? I mean, so rupturing your relationship with God is a horrible thing to do, and yet that clearly is what Jesus is saying that arrogant man has done.
Yeah, and any of us who elevate ourselves, arrogance is really just
putting myself above other people. You know, I am so confident in what I think, how I think, what I do, the way I achieve things in life. In my mind, it's better, more valuable, more important than what most everybody else does, so deal with it. When I do that, I've ignored God. I've said God's word isn't what's going to control my life or direct my life or provide guidance for me. Then
I think the modern word we're using today is entitlement.
Entitlement, yeah.
And that's nothing more annoying than entitled people.
A lot of times we think about... I'm sorry, I'm interrupting.
Well, no, that's right.
We think about people who don't work and get, you know, the various kinds of entitlement from, you know, things that are given to them. But what's recently come out, you know, with this whole college entrance thing with the elite people feel like they're entitled. You know, they are special and their kids deserve special treatment because of who they are. And they're entitled to that because of who they are. So we see, you know, kind of both ends of that. So what do we do as parents? Do we have kids who act entitled, or do we have kids who act like they're better? And if we do, how do we handle that? Angie?
I've said it before in this class, but it starts really, really early. You don't let your child interrupt you. You don't let your child sit in the only chair that's available, or hop up in the couch at somebody's house when there are other people who need to sit. It starts really early with really small things from the beginning. And they have to be told, and we are born selfish people. That's just how we're born. And it has to be driven out of each and every one of us. And it's really hard to do, but little things all the time. I've said before, Trey makes the kids tell me, thank you for dinner. And they don't leave without taking their plate to the sink. It's just in them now, you know. But you start early with that kind of thing, and it will maybe, hopefully, start to sink in that they are not more important than anybody else. They are not, even in our service, I think we have to be careful because I think sometimes in service, I'm trying to figure out how to say this, it reeks of I am better because I can do this, or I am better because I have the means to do this, and it's because of what I've done that I have the means to be of service. And there's a lot of ways for us to point that out to other people, or for it to be seen. We're gonna, you know, social media, put it out there that what my kids are doing or what I've done. And in some ways, that's necessary in order to get the word out. But sometimes service can become an arrogant thing as well.
Absolutely, it can. And I think your illustration of service here is...
I think Jack's kids are... They don't ever... I never even hear about it, and we're pretty close. So
quick disclaimer there. I'm gonna start with saying there's two of us elders in this classroom right now, and I can say this. I have to, you know, act it out or play it out or live it out. But I will say this, and I know David agrees, and we have said things like this before. We understand that because of our role, we're viewed as a leader, and that carries a lot of responsibility. But we also know that there are people who look at us kind of in the, well, you know, he's better because he knows more, so therefore... And we don't want you to feel like that. We want you to feel like you can come talk to us about anything. We also want you to feel like, if you don't like what we've done, if you think something we've done is wrong, we really want to hear from you. We want you to be nice, but we want to hear that. That being said, we understand there are certain roles in service that are more visible. And because the person who is in that role is leading the congregation, that person needs to be better at his task than I am, or most of us. I can't lead, I'm just going to pick on songs, I can't lead songs.
David says I can blend a little bit when I'm singing, but that's even a stretch. That's just not one of the skills that I have. When I get to heaven, I'm hoping that's different. But right now, that's where I am, and I'm okay with that. We don't want Randy to get up and lead songs unless there's some dire need. We have a lot of people who are more talented, who also put in a lot of preparation and effort to do a good job. That's true about every single public task that there is. There's always the risk that someone's going to say, oh, he thinks pretty highly of himself, because 10 people came up to him, told him what a great job he did with this thing or that thing. It's easy for us, when we receive those accolades, to get kind of big-headed. We need to try real hard not to do that. But to Angie's point, it is kind of the reality. It's up to us to try to keep that balance properly. And it is a task. Certainly plays out with our kids, too. Brittany.
My kids might be in therapy for it, I don't know. But we had a situation where we were in the car a couple weeks ago, and one of our kids, I'm not going to throw them under the bus, but was like, I'm so excited for Easter. I'm going to go to Grammy's, and I'm going to get this, and I'm going to get this in my Easter basket, and then we're going here, and like, I'm so excited, I get all this stuff. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, what a terror. Like, and so we decided, which I said they might be in therapy for this later, but like, okay, you guys aren't going to get Easter baskets this year. We're going to do something for somebody else. And I mean, it might have been extreme, and I'm not going to go into what we did, but I just felt like that was, and I hopefully it worked, and they seem happy with it and fine with it, and like they were excited about it. But I don't know, just like, maybe we won't have to do that next year or do something as extreme. And I feel like it's Easter, it's not like Christmas, or they'll be fine. But I just thought it was something where it was like, all right, nope, like we're not doing that. And
you had a teaching moment. And you did kind of what Jack said. Well, we're going to turn this around, and we're going to show you that you're not all that you think you are, or you're not going to get all that you think you're going to get. We're going to make you a servant to other people. And all of us have probably done service for others who needed it, not because we could be rewarded, just because we had an opportunity. And when we left, we were like, that just felt good. And I did something because it was the right thing to do. I had an opportunity. I'm thankful for that. But I just got to do it. I think that's a great illustration. I got a bunch of them. But I want to move on from Proverbs. But are there any illustrations from everyday life about either the parent becoming or not being able to balance, the authority that they have as a parent with the pride they have with their age or whatever? Either on that end, like Bird was talking about, or on the child side, where the children think more of themselves than they should, and how do we deal with that? Any illustration on either side of that? Jay?
So I was just going to, when Dave was talking about entitlement, and you were talking about becoming an all-star, and the lesson that you got to learn at that point. I think one thing that I want to focus on myself, and then teach the kids as well, is being content with what we have. In Ecclesiastes, we've got a great amount of wisdom of someone who kept searching for higher, higher, and higher, and didn't achieve satisfaction. So I think pride sometimes can take us to the point where we think we deserve better than we already have. But what we already have is way more than we deserve, way more than
Yeah, I like that. We think we deserve more. And we live in a time and in a culture where that is just like an expectation. I mean, we are taught and trained to believe that. And a lot of times, it comes to fruition. We work hard, we do a little more than the next guy, and boy, it gets acknowledged, and all of a sudden we start feeling like we're better, and then we start thinking, well, I'm entitled to more. I'm worth more.
My dad told a story the other day when we went to see him for his 90th birthday. And he said when he and his cousins and his aunts and uncles all got together, they would have a potluck, and he was so excited because they all brought fried chicken. And, of course, he said the kids always had to go last, so he said we were just hoping there were some wings left. By the time the kids got through, most all of it was picked over, but he said, you know, that was something I had to learn. And so I think that's true today, too. Kids don't get to have the best, and they are happy with what they do get.
Well, if we can teach them, you know, and they will learn. But the important lesson is try to get them to see that, you know, you sometimes aren't going to get what you think is fair.
Yeah. There were six boys and a girl in his family. So.
Ouch.
Lots of them.
All right. Tim first and then Heather.
I was just going to say, in all these conversations, what something that kept popping to mind is that there is a fine line that we walk, and I think we all know the difference, but we're talking about how we teach that to our kids and make sure they understand. While I don't want my kids to be prideful, right, in how we're talking here, I certainly want them to be able to be proud of the things that they've done, right, in a humble way, right, like not bragging and telling everybody I'm better than you or anything like that. But I want them to be able to enjoy their success, right? And I don't want them to be, while I do want them to be content, right, I don't necessarily want them to be complacent and think, you know, I'm very comfortable where I am. So that is an interesting
dynamic
of how you walk that line of, you know, God made you. You are special, right? Between you and God. Right. You're not any more special than anybody else. And so there's that interesting dynamic that, you know, to sometimes navigate through that, I think can be a tricky thing so we don't sway it too far. You know, I want my son to open the door for people, not because he feels like he's a slave and that's all that he's good at, but I want him to know this is something I can do for others, and I'm glad I can do that. Yeah. Let me get that door for you. You know, it's that interesting.
Yeah. Well, he'll see Dad doing that. Mm-hmm.
So you asked about how humility plays into parenting, and for me, I have a hard time not looking at it from the parent standpoint in a little bit what Dave was talking about, finding the humility or the lack of humility in my own self. And the older I get, the more I realize how much arrogance is actually in me. And I never, as a younger person, would have thought I was the arrogant person. I was not the person that needed the accolades. I was not the person that said, look at me, how great I am. But the older I get, the more I realize in my inability to maybe share with other people and be transparent with what I have struggled with in parenting, my own failures in parenting, and how maybe that's not fair to other parents. How as a church and members of a church, how we can be more helpful to each other if we're not afraid to be humble ourselves in our trying to be the parents that we want to be. And we're going to fail along the way, and it's okay for other people to know about that. We don't need to hide that. And I think that's a really hard thing to kind of lay yourself open. And I know you're not going to do that. I'm not going to stand up in this class and lay everything out that I've ever, you know, not done right or have struggled with. But there's value in that because it helps place me and not be so judgmental of maybe what another parent is doing.
And a younger mother might come to you privately and share some of the struggles. And at that moment, maybe you can share some of those things with her. And you will have plenty of opportunity for that too. I wanted to come back to, you know, thing with Tim said, trying to, you know, keep the balance. We have a very strong biblical teaching when Jesus talked about the man, the men of talents, the 10 talents, 5 talents, 1 talent guy. The struggle we have as parents, when we know we have a child who excels at whatever, you know, maybe academically, maybe music, maybe sports, but they have something they can excel at. They clearly do it better than most of the other kids. Well, then we have a difficulty. I want them to do the best they can do, but I don't want them to think that they're better. So the illustration that I think of when I associate that task or that difficulty is that, well, they're a 10-talent child.
We expect them to use their talents. That doesn't make them more valuable to God. It just says God has given you something, or you possess something that not everybody else possesses. You are expected to use that talent, that skill, that ability to your best. So when we see somebody who maybe is in a position where whatever they're doing just is a little more noteworthy, you know, they're out there and it's more visible to other people, there's a propensity to, you know, give that person a little more attention and kind of elevate them in our own mindset. And you might have a child who fits that. So how do you bring them down, you know, without saying, hey, that's what I expect you to do? You know, you need to use your skill set, your talent, your abilities to the very best. But don't think that that makes you better than the kid or the child who doesn't have that ability. So how would you do that? How would you deal with that? I don't care what illustration. You have a child who excels at something. Jeff.
So my boys are involved with the band quite a bit, and they've been doing really well, and they're all into it. And I have opportunity through one of the other members that I would camp to go to a senior center and make them perform for free. And I don't know about other people's kids, but, you know, they're like, okay, during vacation, no less. You're going to lose a day of your vacation, and you're going to go here, and maybe they don't want to be around old people, quote unquote, whatever, all these kind of things. But no, you have an ability, and these people are very appreciative, and you're going to lose this day of vacation because it's an hour and a half drive, and you're going to get up at 6:30 and all this kind of stuff, and they've got vacation planned out, and... But, like you said, afterwards, they feel good about it.
Yeah. Excellent example. Rich?
So yesterday I was hungry, so I went to Del Taco. And so my kids are getting into their teen years, and we all have issues, but I have an issue with how from the time they were 6 months old, church is the place to get candy from the grandmothers and other grandmothers and everybody else's grandmothers. And then they go to the young people's meetings and get lavished with food and sugar. And then everything is like handed to them. And I think that's a problem. But yesterday,
it's just going to happen. I have the answer.
Yesterday, Daniel Berg took my order at Del Taco. And it just like split my head wide open. I was like, Alco needs a job. The perspective that I could see on Daniel's face as he's trying to figure out how to put pico de gallo into the order, and he's got his shift manager barking at him, and he's sweating, and I'm like, that's it, right? They need to learn the value of hard work. They need to learn an economic perspective on the things that they've been handed, and so... I gotta find out where to go.
Well,
next
Saturday I have a job for Alcorn.
What was that?
Next Saturday I have a job for Alcorn. It will teach the very thing you just said.
Great.
Well,
don't
it will,
pay
it will
him.
Help along
and
the process.
Bark at him. You have to bark at him.
Very
yeah, your grandpa's gonna bark.
He's very humble.
Grandpa's. Barking and grandpa's.
Alvin
kind of like
has it. Too many things on his plate. He don't need to talk. He's
okay.
Working hard.
All right. The first bell rang. I think what we came up with in the. Go. Oh, all right.
One thing I thought of is teaching our children to be happy and joyful for others' successes. I've seen that a lot with my own kids, like with birthday parties. Going, well, I want to get that too. Like, we're not getting that. To tell them, hey, I'm happy for you that you got that, and since you want that, we're getting that, and we're giving it to him, and you're not getting it, you know? I don't know, sometimes there's little things like that, and one one thing in preschool, my daughter, she kept losing to her best friend. They were running, and she's not a runner. That's not her talent. Yeah. And she just kept losing, and she was all upset. And the teacher said, well, we try to tell everybody. They're all winners. And I looked at her and said, well, she's not a winner. She lost. And it's okay that you lost. And I said, Gianna, you should be happy for your best friend because that's something that she's good at. So next time when you lose, you need to tell Madison, you won, Madison, give her a hug. And she did change her perspective on that. So we're not dealing with the whole, we're crying every day because I lost.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that those are discussions that you need to have with your child.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's a great illustration.
You need to watch the old Andy Griffith.
Okay. Well, next week, we're going to look at the questions below the proverbs.
I guess
actually, it is Proverbs, but begin with question two.